Good afternoon, a very warm welcome to another edition of the X Collective. Today we're going to talk about a very exciting topic, account-based marketing and how to make it work. It's a pleasure to introduce to you Nadine van der Waal. She's head of growth at Spotter and has a lot of experience implementing account-based marketing strategies at the company. Nadine, warm welcome.
Thank you.
Perfect. Glad to have you here. Maybe before we start, Nadine, would you be so kind to maybe introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So my name's Nadine. I've been working at Spotter since November. I actually have quite a bit of a different background. I studied art history in a very long past, a very long time ago.
Where did it turn into marketing?
Yeah. Well, graduating in 2012 didn't help.
Of course.
Which was basically the height of the crisis. No, it was horrible. But also, I quickly realized I didn't want to work in the art world. I really liked being a bit more entrepreneurial, mm-hmm. work with tech as well. And especially in the beginning of my career, actually, it was more, I was a social entrepreneur, so I started a foundation after I graduated.
What was it about?
It was about the labor market, since it wasn't very good. It was called Try Before You Get the Job. And basically, we organized lots of events to give a different perspective on work and what kind of opportunities there are for young people. And what we did actually was connect a lot of highly educated job seekers mm-hmm. to the startup world, especially in Amsterdam. And that's actually how I also got into contact with growth hacking.
Mm-hmm. And through the whole entrepreneurial scene.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because of course, you know, in the startup scene, you know, this was all coming up back then, the lean startup methodology and everything that has to do with a more scientific approach to marketing in general. Yeah. And that really appealed to me.
Cool.
So that's how I got started in growth marketing. So I've been working in growth marketing for around 8 years now.
Well, 8 years in growth marketing, then you've seen, you know, the early days up until where we are now.
Exactly.
How has it evolved from your perspective?
Oh, a lot. I think it's maturing a lot. So where it used to be like, you know, more like a
super spiffy.
Exactly. Yeah. And growth hacking, you know, with the idea, okay, let's do a few hacks and then we'll have a million users, you know. I think really people see it more as the next step in marketing now. Mm-hmm. That's also why I don't use the word growth hacking at all. But eventually, you know, it's about using a decent method in trying to grow the company in a sustainable way. And
more scientific and structured approach.
More scientifically approach. Yeah, exactly. Because now it's possible, right, with all the data and the tools we have.
Exactly. I'm thinking full funnel, like from awareness
Absolutely.
Up until let's say acquisition and retention.
Absolutely.
Cool.
So important.
And and your role now with Spotter, what does it look like, and how do you like it so far?
So basically, my job is to build the growth team. I came in the company in November, we've just hired our first content marketer, which is really nice. We have a few more jobs coming up, so if anyone's listening and they want to join our team, you're very welcome.
Never not pitching, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a lot of fun. Like, I mean, the team is just amazing. The product is very interesting and developing every day. And, you know, it's just so much fun to be in a young team with so much energy trying to build this company and then, you know, build the product. So it's awesome.
Cool. And maybe can you share something about the story and the background of Spotter, how it evolved and what you guys do? Actually, I think it would be very nice to hear for the people who are listening, because it's such an advanced product and, you know, with its unique set of challenges, as we already discussed quickly beforehand, you know, creating your own category. How does that work? And can you tell a little bit more about the company?
Sure, absolutely. So the company was started by three founders, Dirk, Tara, Marike. It was called Octo before. We switched to Spotter, I think, around a year and a half ago.
Okay.
And basically, it started with sensors and also was more focused on the inside of a building instead of the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because we, well, they got a lot of requests about, we want to do some maintenance on houses, on buildings, and it's really hard for us to, you know, understand where we should do the maintenance, at what time. And that can cost a lot of money. So, for example, they've been working with window frames. If you don't paint them on time, it will rot. And it will just take a lot of effort and time and money to replace them. So it's really important to be on time with maintenance. So they started with sensors, putting them on window frames just to see how the wood and the paint is holding up.
Exactly.
And but yeah, they iterated from that because it wasn't very scalable.
Putting sensors on everything that you see.
Yeah, exactly. So that first of all. But also, I think there was a patent on the sensors. So it was really expensive to buy them and scale them eventually. And so they iterated from that to drones because they realized, actually, if you look at an image, you can have a really good idea, especially if the quality is good.
Mm-hmm.
You have a really good idea of what the quality is of the building elements. So, you know, why don't we just start collecting a lot of images? And so they started doing that with drones. I think that was around like 3 years ago when drones were still like a really hot topic. They actually got a lot of press with that, which is really funny. But it's really hard to get permits. So
of course, yeah.
Making that scalable is also absolutely complicated. So they iterated from that as well, and then
it's been
realized,
a long way.
Yeah, it's a long way. I mean, that's startup life, right? You keep on iterating until you find the solution. So, but actually, from there, they realized, you know, we don't even need that because there's so many great image sources available, data sources available that we can either just get because they're public, or you can buy them. And from there,
satellite imagery or
satellite, street view, like a LiDAR, like even interior pictures. Like there's so many images that you can just get, but also like a lot of maps. So you know also more about the surroundings of a building because, for example, if you want to know how the foundation. If there are any troubles with the foundations, they're just maps that you can get from, I think, the government.
Yeah, the cadastre.
I'm not sure.
Like
cadastre as well, yeah. But also there are maps about predicting where, for example, there's going to be a lot of floodings in 2050. So you can really see what kind of buildings are prone to that. So you can combine a lot of these imagery of the building itself with surrounding data as well. So you
super
can,
cool.
Absolutely. But the main thing is, so that's what Sputter does, is that we developed an algorithm to recognize elements and measurements on the outside of the building. So that could be the door, glass, window frames, but also solar panels on the roof, the roof itself, but also like is there moss, gutters. So anything that has to do with the outside of the building.
Property management, let's say, and enabling predictive maintenance.
Exactly, exactly.
Cool. And what type of customers do you work with? Who are your ideal customers for Sputter?
So our ideal customers are companies, so it's B2B, with large real estate portfolios. Mm-hmm. And then we're talking about above 5,000 houses.
Okay.
Because often this is where the problem gets really big because they have a huge amount of houses, but they don't really know what they have or how the building, what the condition of the building is. So that's where we can really analyze these buildings at scale to understand, for example, how many windows are in a certain portfolio.
Yeah.
Or, well, eventually you can do lots of analysis with it. So, for example, as well, where are sustainability improvements possible? One example for that is placing solar panels on the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So with Sputter, basically, you can filter out, you know, are there any roofs that are oriented in the right direction? Are they sloped? Are there already solar panels present or not? So with all that information, which you need to do that, you can easily make analyses on your large super real estate cool. portfolio.
And are these customers private companies, or are they public or semi-public? What are the dynamics there?
Both. So basically, our main customers right now are housing associations.
Okay.
In the Netherlands and the UK. So we are active in both countries. You know, they have large portfolios, mm-hmm. obviously, of houses that also need to be maintained. So we help them basically to do maintenance in a more efficient way. And that, you know, we're talking about budgets of millions per year here, yeah. right? Because they're a large portfolio. So if we can save them, you know, a few million per year in maintenance, you know, they just have more money left for building new social houses, which eventually is their job. You know, they have a social responsibility to do that. So,
and why did you prioritize public housing associations over private companies like JLL or Savills? Or any of those kind of institutions?
Yeah. So I think there's some history there as well. So the founders themselves, you know, while working with housing associations, they encounter this problem and, okay. you know, thus yeah. provided the solution.
That makes a lot of sense. If you understand the value chain, it makes yeah. life easier.
Exactly. So, and there's a really clear problem we're solving already with them right now. So that's really nice. But it's not our only vertical. So we are now, we have our first insurance company clients as well.
Nice.
And we're talking to banks as well. So
I think it makes a lot of sense to include these insights in your mortgage products yes. and the kind of those kind of things, right?
Yes. And also, there's more and more pressure to do risk management mm-hmm. from the ECB, for example, for banks. Also regarding to climate change, because there's going to be more damages mm-hmm. due to extreme weather, but also there's going to be transitional costs because we have to make houses more future-proof, to be more isolated, generate more energy themselves through solar panels or whatever else. And all of these things will cost us and will cost banks as well.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, and you are obviously responsible for marketing within Spotter. And you've mentioned a few, let's say, organizational archetypes that, to me, you know, sound complex to sell to mm-hmm. Because yeah. they are heavy enterprise. They are typically, you know, it involves many different stakeholders in a decision-making unit mm-hmm. that you need to activate, right? That's also
Absolutely.
A bit of a bridge towards the topic, of course.
Yeah.
How would you characterize the companies that you sell to? You know, that's the foundation of the work that you do, of course,
yeah.
that determines your routes to market, your tactics, mm-hmm. how you develop your team. Can yeah. you elaborate a little bit on how you would characterize your ideal customer profile?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So basically, we sell to large enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, not every company or organization has more than 5,000 houses in their portfolio, obviously.
Of course.
So we're really talking about either large banks or insurance companies or housing associations
mm-hmm.
Or actually governments, local governments as well, municipalities. So these are large organizations and indeed what you say with a big decision-making unit. So for us, it's really important to identify, you know, who's our initiator in the company. And for example, within housing associations, often that's the asset managers because they really experience that pain of having to plan the maintenance and wanting to do that effectively and they can't. There are also, you know, the influencer, the blocker. There are many people in that decision-making unit we've identified.
How long does an average sales cycle take, approximately?
Pretty long. We're trying to get that down, but I would say, well, it depends. So basically, often we start with a pilot. So that's a smaller size of their entire portfolio, basically to show them how it works.
Mm-hmm.
That could go really quick. And then I'm talking about 3-4 months.
Okay.
But like a full license, so full on using it with the entire company, that takes up to a year.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense because these organizations are so complex, scattered across different geographies, different departments.
Yeah.
So it's hard to motivate them or to activate them, if you will, of course. Mm. Reflecting on what you've mentioned, I think you've deliberately chosen to focus on one subsegment first and then, you know, creating a scalable distribution model there before moving on to new applications, which is very sensible. And I think what is very appropriate also in an early stage company, because you want to refrain from doing too many things at the same time, of course.
Yeah.
Because of this, you also have a very narrow set of customers that you want to focus on. And you've decided to really go the account-based marketing route, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can you tell a little bit on why you feel account-based marketing for you and for Spotr is the way to go?
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, even before I joined Spotr, you know, it makes sense for large enterprise-focused products or companies to do something with account-based marketing because you're talking about long sales cycles. You really want to reduce them, huge DMUs. So, you know, you really need to talk to a lot of people before you actually make the sale. And often they're just smaller ponds because how many large banks are there in the world? You know, sure, globally speaking, there's quite
a few,
but relatively.
But
if you look at, for example, smaller companies or consumer, like it's a drop in a bucket. So, and of course, there's a higher customer lifetime value. So that really also gives you the opportunity to do more. But I think for Spotr, especially the fact that we wanted to start, you know, really make sure that we have a good presence in the Dutch market. And there are 300 housing associations in the Dutch market.
Yep.
So for us, it was really clear, you know, we have to focus on these. But also, which one are you going to prioritize on first? Because, you know, one portfolio can have 5,000, but the other can have 70,000 houses. So, and we charge per house. So obviously for us, there's a disparity there in customers. So for us, it's really important to prioritize, which is really important to get the sales cycle down. And also because we're in sort of a white space, because our product is quite innovative for a quite traditional sector or industry.
Yeah.
It takes some time to also educate about how can this be used? How can it be implemented in the company as well, or in the housing association organization? You know, because it's not just a tool; it's also the process and the people that need to have the mindset and working together. So
you need to create your own category,
absolutely,
so to say,
people
defer to as a sort of standard solution that they need to implement if they want to do property management well. Which probably takes time because there was no replacement before, right?
Exactly.
It was done on pen and paper or a bit of guesswork.
Definitely, yeah. So basically, we're also consultants. That's basically what it comes down to.
So because you know your accounts and it's very sales heavy, you probably have a very consultative sales approach. And I think this is also where the strategy ties in, right? The alignment between marketing and sales. Is that also one of the findings that the learnings that you have so far in implementing account-based marketing, that it aligns marketing and sales better across the entire funnel?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's basically also how we started because we are a large enterprise company and we want to approach these accounts. It does not make sense for these two to be isolated, marketing and sales.
Mm-hmm.
I think honestly, it's crazy if that still happens in any company these days, but I know it still does.
You'll be surprised.
Exactly. But especially for, you know, an account-based marketing approach, it's so important for sales and marketing to talk to each other because you need each other throughout the entire funnel. We're really reaping the fruits of that approach right now because we work together as one commercial team in sprints. So we meet every week. We have the goals we want to achieve in each sprint. And that also gives us the opportunity for sales to tell us, we're working with this account, we know that this is important for them, we only are talking to one person, we would like to talk to a few more. You know, marketing, can you work some magic and, you know, give us a few more leads? And, you know, of course, we oblige.
Yeah. But I think, you know, for the type of segment that you sell to, probably every deal is sales generated or influenced, but also every deal will be marketing influenced somewhere downstream in the funnel.
Yes.
In any case.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And the same goes for sales, really, because they give us input on, for example, if we really want to focus on one specific account and give them a really personalized customer journey because they're important to us, their insights are so important because then we know where the pain is, what we should really focus on.
Yep.
Because there's so much, especially if you're working in a niche market, there's so much you can do with a keyword research or things like that. You know, sometimes it boils down to knowing, well, it always boils down to knowing your customer, but, you know, sales is out there.
Yeah, like the eyes and ears in the market.
Eyes and ears, yeah. And for us, that's super valuable.
Of course. Hey, and we've been speaking about account-based marketing. You've been working with account-based marketing yourself. To me, account-based marketing is what everybody talks about, it's a bit of a buzzword at the moment that everybody's speaking about, but I get the feeling that people find it really hard to implement it and to make it work for them.
Yeah.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about how you approached this and how you started? So what are the first steps to actually get started with account-based marketing from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. So I think, honestly, the first step is to get everyone aligned and get everyone on board on this. Because if there's no buy-in from both your colleagues, from sales or from C-level, which in our case is the founder, super flat and scale up. So, but, you know, that is the first step, making sure everyone understands why we're doing this.
Yep. So mobilizing the organization.
Yeah.
So that everybody is on the same page.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So to get all, you know, noses in one direction.
Yep. Yeah.
And so that's the first step, really. And from there, for us, of course, you need to define your ICP. But for us, we already knew that. So that was really clear to us. And then basically we started setting up a wish list of accounts. Mm-hmm. So the ones are top 35, and we defined those, of course, by size, but it's not the only thing that's important. We're also looking at, you know, are they ready for our product, especially if it's innovative?
Yep.
You know, they need to take data and the digital transformation seriously. And some companies are just further ahead than others. So there are a few details that we really looked at in terms of defining that list.
So readiness,
yes.
Potential.
Mm. Potential, but sometimes also, you know, something really basic, like how warm is the contact already, or do we have any contacts there already? So what's the low-hanging fruit? So those were really the most important.
And maybe some news or so to see what is happening at these companies. Are they actively exploring novel solutions, or are they not really up for this? So.
Exactly. Actually, one I forgot, which is one of the most important things, is that they are working in a certain way. So there's something called RGS, so in Dutch, resultaatgericht samenwerken.
Yeah, okay.
And we really see that that is closely aligned to using our product, because it means that they're really focusing on this innovative new way of working, in which they need data to check the quality at the end of a cycle, and they don't have that data right now. So we know that if they work that way, they are really basically...
Okay, so this is an important qualifier, and if they do, then probably you rank them in different tiers or so.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. So exactly, so basically that's the next step, tiering.
Okay.
So we used three different tiers to qualify what kind of content we want to hit them with.
Mm-hmm.
So tier one is really a few accounts that are really important to us, and we want to give them a personalized journey. Because, you know, if we land a few, that's huge for our ARR, basically. Then we have tier two, where we, these are also very important accounts, but we do more topical content there. So we know, for example, housing associations that have a lot of houses in the city, mm-hmm. they have specific problems with creating new houses. So we want to help them look for opportunities, for example, to build houses on top of existing houses.
Nice.
So that's an example of topical content. And then we have tier three, where we basically, it's the layered content marketing that's underneath. So this is industry content that also includes case studies, by the way, that we just send to everyone because we think it's really interesting mm-hmm. for them to learn about it.
Cool. So basically, that's your sort of content framework that you use to create personalized messaging at scale, right?
For yep.
So you can immediately see, okay, what type of content is relevant for what type of customer segments. Mm-hmm. And then use this framework. So you mentioned personalized content, right?
Yes.
Which yep. is one-on-one findings or learnings or things that you see that may trigger them to engage with you.
Exactly.
Then you mentioned vertical content or topical.
Yes, topical.
Not to be mistaken by tropical.
tropical, why not?
And generic content, which is like sort of evergreen, ongoing content that yes. is relevant for the entire yeah. industry or so.
Yeah, because, you know, eventually I think ABM is a strategy you build on top of content marketing strategy. So mm-hmm. it's still something you need to be doing.
Okay, cool. Yeah. And how do you consequently make sure that you have the right message and distribute it in the right way mm-hmm. Across the entire funnel, making sure that, you know, marketing is in perfect concert with what sales is doing yep. and that they have consistent messaging throughout the entire funnel. How does this work? Mm-hmm. And do you have a sort of structure for this, which you can share maybe?
Yeah. Well, so basically we started out with just plotting the entire journey and what kind of messaging, what the storyline through the journey is basically. So we have a clear idea, you know, an awareness phase, they don't know anything, and we basically need to talk about the problem. Mm-hmm. MQLs, a bit more about already like the solution, what kind of solutions are out there for their problem. And then SQL, you know, we're talking more about trying to understand what their specific problems are so we can get some buy-in on their problems, first of all, and then, you know, really start producing content on their specific problems. And also do some show them that other peers or other companies are also using our service. So okay. Social validation. So,
yeah, exactly. Social proof.
Social proof, exactly. So those are a few things we just mapped out in the journey, you know, how would that look like for mm-hmm. us? And we built content on top of that. And so basically what we do is we try to really look at that every week. We also decide what kind of content are we going to put out? You know, where are the lacks that we have at this point? And eventually, it still boils down to the meetings right now. For example, if sales is working on a certain account and they notice, oh, they really love what this company is doing, that we, you know, blast a case study with that company then to specifically to target this account. So right now, you know, in the little things, it's still in the meetings. And I think that really makes a huge difference.
Okay.
But overall, we really try to capture everything in that framework that we've set up
yep.
and that we're basically improving every day.
Okay. So reflecting on this, you probably distinguish in a different stage of the funnel, let's say on an aggregated level, let's say top, mid and bottom of funnel. Mm-hmm. And then you look at, okay, what are the appropriate formats yep. that you can use, like content formats, whether it's, if it's downstream in the funnel, it's probably case studies. If
yes.
it's top mm-hmm. of funnel awareness type of content,
yeah.
it's probably social or blogs or things that you, like generic content that you put out there.
Yeah. It depends. So for tier one, it's different because there we go really specific.
Okay.
So this can also differ per tier, but like in general, that's what we try to do. So we just switch it out, you know.
Yeah.
We have an overall framework.
Yeah.
And then we switch out content. If we think this is tier two, they need to have topical content. So that's what we're going to do in the awareness phase. And from there, we take it throughout the entire funnel.
Cool.
Yeah.
And this alignment between sales is imperative. You mentioned, you know, it's very much in meetings and the feedback that you get from meetings.
Yeah.
How do you make this scalable? How can this work at scale? Because it sounds like, you know, it's dependent also on a bit of serendipity, of course.
It's not entirely serendipical because we really make it a topic on our calendar, on our agenda, you know, in the meeting. So it's like, okay, what kind of accounts were you talking to this week or last 2 weeks? Yep. And, you know, which ones can we pick up from marketing point of view and the other way around? And of course, I mean, they're Slack. So, you know, if anything comes up in between.
It's hard not to stay up to date in this era. Right?
Exactly. So it's not like, you know, everyone has to wait until the meeting is there, but... But I think overall, we try, and I think that's an area where we really still are improving, is to understand how engaged accounts are, because then, you know, we can have a much better view of where are the opportunities. So I think we'll probably hit the learnings later, but that's already a learning that we're really working on to understand better what engagement of an account looks like for us.
Yeah, but in any case, I think the insight that you shared is probably super simple if you hear it. But I think it's a great thing to share with the audience. You know, that if you first of all, you need to have like periodic meetings between marketing and sales with a predefined agenda on which this is a deliberate topic that you want to run through, and in this way, you continuously pick up the thread and identify, you know, what the opportunities are for marketing to engage upon. It sounds super simple, but I think it's a very effective thing to share.
Absolutely. I also think just working in sprints, it's every time it baffles me again how nice it is, because it makes things so concrete and concise. You know, everyone knows what they're going to do. And what we really do, we take a lot of time. We take an hour to review the sprint, to really understand what happened, what were, you know, things that went well, what do we need to improve.
Yep.
And then we take only half an hour, basically, for the to-dos, because we're often, in practice, we're really aligned after that. So then, you know, marketing gets together, you know, shares the to-dos, and then sales does the same, and then we basically align again in a short meeting saying, you know, this is what marketing is going to work on. This is what sales is going to work on. If you see opportunities, let us know. But, you know, this is for the next sprint.
Cool, yeah. It takes a bit of pain to set it up probably and to get the process rolling. But once you have it running, it's super effective.
Yeah, and we iterated as well because we started with way too many meetings and talking about to-dos only, which didn't work. So, yeah, it takes a while to get them crisp and effective.
Cool. This is very, very insightful. And are there possibly any other learnings, you know, from implementing account-based marketing at Spotter that you want to share with the audience?
Yeah, I think so. First of all, I think one of our goals was to understand, is account-based marketing even a good fit for us in strategy? We wanted to validate it. And I think the first signs are very encouraging. So we're getting in a good volume of really high-quality leads. So we're very happy with that. We've had some great successes with ads, topical ads that really worked, especially on those tier twos. And you know, of course, we're better connected as sales and marketing, but also we have like a really, it's really clear to all of us where the priorities lie. That being said, though, I think we still have a lot to learn for sure. And I think one of the lessons we definitely learned was about understanding indicator metrics. So what I just told you as well is that because we're not talking about volume, so it's not like, oh, conversion is low in this part of the funnel, so we need to work on it. It's more about understanding what engagement looks like in your accounts. When are they ready to buy?
Yeah, basically. Because there's not a lot of data.
There's not a lot of data, and it's hard to quantify it because, you know, you can see like little hints like, oh, they're coming back a lot on the website, or they're downloading this, or lots of people in the account are downloading this. So you can get some indicators, but I think we're still searching for what are the right indicator metrics for engagement for us.
And it probably may also vary, let's say, customer segment by customer segment.
Oh, right? Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm convinced of that. So, it's a journey.
Yeah, of course.
What can I say? It's a learning process.
And what impact? Because you spoke about indicators, and we spoke about, you know, the combination of science and art in this whole process. Mm-hmm. How did you deal with your CRM system? How did you make it work for you? Because typically, CRM systems are designed for, let's say, more mass marketing and sales activity.
Yeah.
How did you set it up specifically to make it fit for your account-based marketing tactics?
So basically, we started out with just putting in the right qualifiers in which we with which we created our top 35 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we score them on those indicators, so we know which accounts are important to us. So that first of all. But second of all, we also put up lead scoring, basically, you know, on an assumption for us that if they do this and this and this, they're probably engaged. But it's a learning process still. And we're trying to put up dashboards that really give us more insights into how we're doing. So we have a clear idea. This is how many SQLs we want in this quarter. You know, how are we doing, and how many leads, for example, per account do we have, and how engaged are they? So how far is their lead scoring to give us an idea of what's going on per account? But I have to say it's challenging with the tool we have now. So I do know there are better specified tools for that. So we might switch at some point. If the strategy is really validated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely a challenge because, as you say, most tools are still really focused on volume.
Yeah, definitely. So that's why I was also eager to understand a bit about, you know, what are your findings so far and how do you adapt it to make it fit for the strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Nadine, thank you so much. Like, is there, I thought it was a really interesting conversation. Thank you for all the insights.
Thank you for having me.
Is there anything in like a final thing you want to share with the audience that I did not ask you already?
Oh, wow. That's very broad.
Or did I maybe?
Be happy. I don't know.
For all growth marketeers that are listening and trying to understand how they can implement account-based marketing, is there anything you like a final piece of advice that you have to share with them? As no dating advice in the
category. I mean, the best advice is just to really connect with your salespeople. You know, sales and marketing, they're one team. You know, I really believe in that. So do everything what it takes to become one commercial team, because it will really pay off.
Nice. Cool. Nadine, thank you very much.
Thank you.
For any other listeners, if you'd like to learn more about account-based marketing, feel free to get in touch. Thank you very much for this very inspirational talk.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Ciao. Thank you.